For Men's Health Week, I want to know if you've changed how you talk about mental health with your friends or your partner or your family. Are you seeing a change when it comes to men's mental health and the ability to be vulnerable and to open up? Tell me how you're going or how the men in your life are going with communicating about emotions on the ABC Radio National Facebook page. With me for this conversation is Dr. Zach Seidler, clinical psychologist, director of mental health training at Movember. Zach, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Hilary.
Hi. And Tarang Chawla, he's a writer, a lawyer, an anti-violence campaigner and a mental health advocate. Tarang, great to have you here.
Thanks for having us on.
And I understand that you've both worked together on the Movember Mate campaign, but not actually met in person.
Exactly. And now we get to hear each other's voices from a distance.
Exactly. Perfect. Connected over the airwaves. Well, Zach Seidler, I'll start with you. How much do we know about how comfortable men are these days with talking about their feelings and their mental health?
We know that things are changing. There's no doubt about that. These types of conversations that we're having on the radio would never have happened a decade ago. We've moved into a new world of masculinity, I think, in many ways, in that we're starting to understand that guys come in all shapes and sizes, their emotions don't fit into a box, and we understand, I guess, in many ways that guys can talk about how they're feeling. They just do it in very different ways to what we might expect. And we might need to open up that definition of, you know, talking about depression or anxiety. You don't necessarily need to sit down and cry to me. You can emote in really different ways.
So it's changing, but how much does it still have to go, Zach? How much do men struggle with connecting to their emotions and expressing them to other people?
There's no doubt that there's a long way to go. And I think, you know, my day-to-day as a clinical psychologist proves that, and as do the mental health statistics that we're dealing with across Australia. You know, last year we had to update our comms at Movember to say that we're now losing 7 men a day to suicide rather than 6 in this country. So there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of suffering, and there's a lot of silence and stoicism that still goes on. And so it really comes down to social connection and mateship and men talking to one another, let alone to the women in their lives, about what's going on in their lives. Because we know that things like unemployment, financial distress, relationship breakdown, these really important situations that happen in men's lives are actually really key precursors and risk factors for suicidality as well.
And Tarang, you were almost one of those statistics. I'm so glad that you got the help you needed eventually. But let's talk about, I guess, the different ways people can experience mental ill health. You're a South Asian man. How was mental health talked about in your family and your social circles?
I've been lucky in the sense, Hilary, that, you know, I've got a support network around me. I've got great friends, great, you know, supportive parents and family. So it's something that once I, you know, spoke out about it, I wasn't adversely judged. But I think that the broader, you know, aspect for not only South Asian men, but, you know, for instance, people from the LGBTQI community, or as Zach touched on earlier, men experience mental ill health in different ways. And so from my experience as a South Asian man, there are certain pressures that are felt within the community. So for instance, the idea that men from South Asia or any migrant man in Australia has to fit the model minority myth, and all these pressures around doing well in life and success and what that looks like and what that means for certain migrants contribute to the pressure of mental ill health. And so I think it's very important across communities to have these open and frank conversations around the different ways that mental ill health can manifest.
And as you say, I mean, those are threads that you can find across Australian society, that pressure to be a high achiever, but they play out in different ways. Tarang, you became an anti-violence campaigner after your sister Nikki was murdered by her partner. And I'm sorry to have to make you touch in with that time again, but when did you realise that you were in such a dark place that you needed help?
It crept up on me, Hilary, and that was the, you know, the thing that the benefit of hindsight gives me is that I didn't realize how bad a space I was in. I started doing a lot of campaign and advocacy work following the murder of my sister, and in its own way, that became an outlet for grief and handling the pain of loss and that trauma. And so I did speak to psychologists, but I thought I was in a much better space than I was in reality. And so things crept up for me. And one of the messages that I like to impress upon men is to start flexing that emotional muscle early on and to start talking about things, even when they may not necessarily be aware that there is something, you know, serious or more sinister lurking, as was the case with me. It's obviously rarer for that to happen, but the issues that Zach touched on from a clinical perspective, that last year Movember had to update their communications, that it's now 7 men a day in this country to suicide as opposed to 6 previously, clearly highlights the sort of extent of the issue. We don't have to think too far for all of us to know that someone in our life has been impacted in such a horrendous and horrific way by men's suicide.
Yeah, and the ripples just spread out and out for some time, don't they, when something like that happens? And Tarang, you had some bad experiences and some good experiences when you did reach out to seek professional help. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, I think one of the things that it touched on for me, Hillary, was the importance and significance of culturally competent, you know, psychologists and culturally competent training around mental health and allied health professionals. One of my experiences was that, you know, it requires mental health professionals to have a clear idea of different dynamics of communities and how mental ill health manifests. And so the strategies and tips that are required to deal with it can often differ. In my experience, and speaking personally, I take antidepressant medication, and I think, you know, I'm quite open about that. And I think there's certainly no shame in having to do that if it's what's required. And so that's something that I do every day. But it's part of a broader suite of mental health strategies that I've implemented. So, for instance, if I'm speaking regularly with mates and things around that nature, and I did a campaign with Zach that we touched on earlier around Movember, and one of the things I said during that is that good mates help me with my mental health. You know, so having those support networks and actually cultivating it is a mutually beneficial relationship. It not only helps me, but allows me to now being in the position that I'm in, pay it forward to be able to help my friends around me as well.
And Zach Seidler, I mean, Tarang's talking about is taking control of his own mental health and putting structures in place. That's a form of self-care. Does the term self-care get traction among men these days? I mean, we might associate it more with bath bombs and face masks and things like that. How important is it as a concept in protecting people's mental health?
Exactly, Hillary. I think it's been feminized to an extent, and we need to bring it back into the middle and understand that it's definitely something that men should be looking out for and understanding what are their own self-care practices, what are things that they can do, they're going to make sure that they can look after themselves and those around them. And that's where we start to leverage masculinity to our advantage. Things like control and stoicism and self-reliance and risk-taking, all the things that men, you know, believe that they need to uphold, these standards of masculinity, can actually be used to our advantage as mental health clinicians, as friends. We can call on those things and tell men there's no need to leave that stuff at the door. We can find a way to integrate it into the way that we are, you know, treating men, for instance. So if Tarang wants to take control of his strategies and make sure that he has very clear structures around his mental health, that's something that a GP or a psychologist can really help with. And so it's a matter of not going, you don't need to fit into this box, and, you know, we need to sit down here and talk about your childhood and all of these stereotypes around what mental health treatment is. In fact, we can do it in a really male-sensitized way that fits and works for these guys. And that requires asking them what they want rather than assuming.
And Zach, there's been a whole discussion about the idea of toxic masculinity and whether there are aspects of traditional masculinity, as it's been expressed in Western culture, that are bad for men as well as for their families and people they know. Is that a useful way to think about masculinity when we're looking at men's mental health, or are there other ways that you can talk about it?
Exactly. The truth is that type of language around toxic masculinity, my own experience, can be really isolating for many men. It can really shame them and it can distance them. And when we know that certain forms of traditional masculinity are in fact dangerous in their extreme for many men, when they are done flexibly, for instance, a firefighter is really stoic. Yeah, he runs into the fire. He makes sure that he is on point. He knows what he's doing. But as long as he comes out and he can be vulnerable and he can share the experience and make sure that he doesn't become traumatized by whatever he did or saw by bottling it up, it's that type of flexibility that we need. These aspects of masculinity are healthy in many instances, but if you stick to them rigidly, that's when they start to become really dangerous. And that's what we're seeing happening in the violence space. We see it in the mental health space. We just really need men to start to reckon with their gender. We need them to understand what are the bounds of their masculinity. When is the time and place to apply some of this stuff? When is the time to take off that mask, that idea of this unattainable standard of masculinity, because it is hard won and really easily lost. And it's that sense of failure that really harms men believing that they haven't lived up to something. And that's something hopefully within society that we can break down.
And you occasionally read about some programs where men are encouraged to talk about what makes them feel stuck in a man box, that kind of constrictive gender role. Are there ways that men are changing those traditional ideas, Zach, and kind of reinstituting some flexibility into what might be really rigid gendered constraints?
There's no doubt it's happening all over. And I like to think that our next generation of boys and men are slowly, grabbing this with both hands and understanding that the constraints that their fathers and grandfathers had to deal with, which was really difficult for them. And we've all witnessed it, that idea that, yeah, I'm fine, that grunt, that, you know, just getting on with it situation, that meant that many of these guys didn't have relationships with their partners or their children in ways that they wish they had, this emotionally rich life. What's really important is that when we look at 4- and 5-year-old boys who start to become socialized by this masculine, you know, restrictive gender role, as they age, they start to lose both ends of the emotional spectrum. So it's not only that the sadness becomes repressed, but also joy. And so they start to restrict and restrict and restrict over time. And what they end up with is this little nugget of emotion that they're willing to show. And that's not how we're trained and made to be as human beings. And so it's not healthy, it's not helpful, and it's not the most productive and efficient way to live your life as well. So I really try to tap in to talking to these guys around their work, their relationships, and understanding that there's a lot of flexibility here that's going to help them be the best men that they can be.
Tarang, what are you seeing when it comes to people reevaluating what it means to be a man, the social rules, I guess, that we feel we've inherited about what it means to be a man?
I certainly think it's changing, and in my experience, one of the things that I found coming out of the, you know, the other side of this COVID pandemic, which obviously had a lot of effects on men's mental health, was that we all had to shift towards using Zoom and social media and other ways of not only working but keeping in touch with friends and family, is that that became an outlet in my social circles for men to be able to be vulnerable and to start opening up and start exercising and displaying that range of emotional flexibility in terms of what it means to be a man. So I found a lot of men turning to social media and other things to be able to open up, and perhaps it led to the fact that there's less likelihood of judgment and that there's a degree of comfort in being able to share one's experiences and one's emotions without necessarily having that face-to-face judgment. So I found a lot of men starting to open up more about the pressures that they were feeling, whether it was financial or relationship breakdown or other pressures, or just the monotony and mundanity of being stuck in lockdown as we were in Victoria, where I'm based. So I found that within my immediate circle, there was this shift, certainly in the last 12 months, probably more pronounced than in years prior, towards trying to open up and speak more about what's going on internally. And I can only applaud and congratulate all men and encourage more to do the same. It's such an important part of that self-care, and that aspect of the conversation that we touched on earlier, I think, is so key around not wanting to make self-care about being overtly feminine or masculine, and you touch on bath bombs and face masks and things. But for me, self-care looks like making sure that I maintain my appointments with my psychologist, I take my medication every day, and I regularly check in and follow the strategies that have been implemented alongside my mental health professionals. And I think that this shift that we're seeing is so key, and I can only hope that it continues in years to come.
And Tarang, I mean, do you think it's a generational thing? Because often younger men look up to older men. Do you think that this is across the board, this shift and a gradual opening up?
I think so. I think that we're seeing it across generations, but there's certainly a generational component that Zach touched on earlier that I agree with, which is that we see, you know, for instance, grandfathers and older men who were socialized into this sense of masculinity that one wouldn't talk about their emotions, or they wouldn't talk about what was difficult. And, you know, the only time we'd see men express any kind of overt joy was in certain settings around sport and other things, or the only time we'd see them express profound sadness was at a funeral. But the actual range of human experiences that aren't a grand final or a funeral are many and varied. And so I think it's very important to create situations and spaces and safe spaces for men to be able to speak. That's not just the psychologist's chair or not just a visit to the GP. And so I think what we're seeing generationally is more boys and men, particularly younger adolescent teens, creating spaces among their peer networks to be able to express themselves. And so that's what gives, I imagine, Zach from a clinical perspective, but also from my perspective as a suicide survivor, a degree of optimism about what the future holds.
We're speaking with Tarang Chawla, writer, lawyer, anti-violence campaigner and mental health advocate. He's been involved with Movember's campaigns, as has Dr. Zach Seidler, clinical psychologist and director of mental health training at Movember. And we'd love your input too. How do you think we're going, making space for men to open up for with their emotions and about their mental health? How are the men in your life managing that? You can head to the ABC Radio National Facebook page and tell us about that. Are you seeing a change? My name's Hilary Harper and you're listening to Life Matters. Zach Seidler, we've got a couple of minutes left. I want to ask you, there seem to sometimes be a binary around how some men talk to their partners, if it's a female partner. Some struggle even to open up to their partners, and their partners are desperately trying to chip away at them, saying, you know, what is going on for you? How are you? And others can only open up to their partner. So the partner ends up doing a lot of work to try and help understand and help them. What's going on with those two extremes in your view?
So there's a lot of emotional labour that many women are undertaking as a result of the fact that men are socialised in a way, as we've spoken, about the fact that they can't necessarily speak to the men in their lives for fear of the stigma and the shame and the feeling of being feminised by talking about their emotions with their mates. And then there's the other flip side, which is I think that those men who don't even speak to their partners probably don't speak to anyone at all about what's going on for them. So there's those men who feel comfortable talking to their partners, but really put on too much of this heavy emotion onto that person. And then there's those people who are completely restricted, full stop, and won't share with anybody. What we need to do is find these spaces and places where men can find those role models, find that mentor, find that person in their life who they can share things with, as Tarang said, before anything hits the fan, before things become really difficult. I always say, as a psychologist, I want to see you when you're well. I find it really difficult to treat people. And this is what happens with many men. They come in a point of crisis. They come in when things are really difficult. They can't get out of bed. They're about to lose their job. Their relationship is breaking down. They know that things have been going poorly for the past couple of months, but they couldn't really face it. They didn't really know how bad it really was. So we're hoping to get to the point where men can find those people to lean on, those people that they can talk to before things really get really difficult for them. And then they can come and see a GP or a psychologist, and we can implement strategies that are actually practical and useful in the moment, rather than having to deal with the crisis first for the first couple of months and then moving on. For all of the women out there, it shouldn't be the emotional labor that they need to take on. They've got their own things to deal with. Obviously, there's, you know, the natural ways of being a partner and leaning on the person that you love. But we want to make sure that men have boundless opportunities with their footy club, with, you know, their mates at work, whoever it may be, to really open up those lines of communication.
Mm, definitely we do. Thank you both so much for joining us on Life Matters today, Tarang Chawla and Dr. Zach Seidler.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Zach Seidler is a clinical psychologist, director of mental health training at Movember. And Tarang Chawla is many things, but among them, anti-violence campaigner and a mental health advocate. And it's great to see that there are lots of resources out there for men seeking help. Beyondblue.org.au has some great stuff on their site. Lifeline 13 11 14 are always there. And Men's Line Australia is 1300 789 978. 1300 789 978, and they can arrange an interpreter for you too in a language that you're comfortable with.